Believe it or not. The Blue Network, in cooperation with the Coordinator of Inter-American Affairs, presents this program dedicated to all Americans in all the Americas. Featured is Robert L. Ripley and his famous Believe It or Not, together with B.A. Rolfe, D'Artega, and his famous Latin American orchestra and the songs of Sarita Arara. You know, it was just 22 years ago that Bob Ripley, the most traveled man in history, made his first trip to the Americas. And in all his travels through more than 200 countries, he has visited the republics to the south of us most often. On these visits to the other Americas, he has found unbelievable stories of adventure, romance, and colorful drama. And now, all this brilliant cavalcade of the unbelievable will be brought to you through the medium of Believe It or Not. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, that quick quizzing quizmaster of quirks, with his quiver of quality quips, Believe It or Not, Bob Ripley.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the program tonight. As we've already mentioned, the purpose of our getting together is to get better acquainted with the 20 American republics which lie to the south of us. I have found that the better you know a friend, the closer you are drawn to him. So now I want you to become better acquainted with my friends. During my many trips to the other Americas, I found them just like my friends in the United States. They are friendly, they are hospitable, they have a grand sense of humor, fine sportsmen, and, as we say, just regular people. You know, we've really got a great many things in this country that came from the other Americas. Why, they had skyscrapers 100 years before we in the United States ever thought of them. And in Trujillo, Peru, I saw a pyramid that was almost twice the size of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, even the word hoosegow came from the other Americans. Now, speaking of hoosegow, here comes a fugitive from one, our old friend, B.A. Rolfe.
Hello, Bob.
Say, what are you so pleased about, hoosegow?
All this week I've been thinking about what you said on the program last Saturday.
Really? Well, did it get you anywhere?
Well, I thought of something for which Brooklyn can be thankful to South America.
Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Thankful?
You said South America gave us rubber.
Yes.
Out of which developed the rubber ball. Mm-hmm. Out of which developed baseball. Out of which developed the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And without which, Brooklyn would never be known.
Say, Brooklyn won't like you for that, B.A. But you're right about rubber. And another thing, how do you suppose those Dodger fans are able to ball out the umpire the way they do?
I've often wondered.
By training their jaws on chewing gum, B.A.
They do it with chewing gum, Bob?
I'm sure of it. You know, chewing gum was brought to the United States by a South American.
Yeah.
That gives the Brooklynites another obligation to our neighbors. Now, let's take you, B.A.
Me?
Well, haven't you been taken before?
Yes, too many times.
You know how lazy you are with all those 285 pounds you carry around.
No, I'm not lazy, Bob. I get a little tired.
Oh, so you get a little tired. Now, B.A., when you climb into a hammock for a summer afternoon siesta, do you give our southern neighbors a nod of silent thanks?
I never thought of it. Do I have South America to thank for my siesta?
No, for the hammock.
Oh. Well, I can never be grateful for that, Bob, because they didn't invent them big enough to hold me.
But, B.A., they were inventing a hammock, not a suspension bridge.
Yeah.
But now it's time for music. And, B.A., what's the Believe It or Not music division got to offer this evening?
A very popular Caribbean dance called the Caracha. One of those exciting dances with a whirling, intoxicating rhythm. Here it is. D'Artega and his orchestra playing a caracha entitled Paran Panpin. Chiquito sings the vocal.
Con tu care paran panpin, pim pam. Care param pam pim pam. Yo te he visto con María en la puerta de Solá. Yo te he visto con María en la puerta de Solá. Ajá, ajá, pim, pam, pum. Ajá, pim, pam, pum. Para un pam, pim, pim, pam. Yo te he visto con María, la puerta de Solar. Te he visto con María, la puerta de Solar. Ja, 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 pim, pum, pum. Ja, 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 pim, pam, pum.
See that he's in front of his drawing board, ready to start a believe it or not sketch. What's it about, Bob?
It's about two great men, B.A., whose friendship was responsible for one of the greatest benefits to our generation. One of these great men was Dom Pedro II, Emperor of Brazil. And like the present chief executive of Brazil, the distinguished Getúlio Vargas, Dom Pedro was one of the most democratic patriots history has ever seen, and above all, a truly great American. The time is June the 25th, 1876. Dom Pedro was visiting the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition, and he had spent hours studying every single exhibit. And as our scene opens, we find his two guides, officers of the exposition, trying to persuade him that he had seen everything, and because of the heat of the day, suggesting that he draw his visit to a close. Dom Pedro is speaking.
Well, gentlemen, it is most certainly an exciting day which you are showing me.
But I think now that we've covered just about everything of importance, Your Majesty.
Well, just a moment. There is something over here which I do not think I've seen.
Oh? Oh, that group. They're the inventors with schemes that will never amount to anything, Your Majesty.
Oh, wait. Wait, that pale-faced young man who just coughed. Well, I know him. He's the head of the Boston School for the Deaf. I'm very well acquainted with their work. Mr. Bell! Hello.
Oh, Your Majesty, I can't tell you how glad I am to see you.
And how is your school for the deaf coming along?
Oh, very fine, thanks. But I've taken this leave of absence to show another piece of my work here at the exhibition.
So? And how goes this end of your work?
Well, not very well, I'm afraid. I'm called an eccentric, and no one has even looked at my little invention.
Oh, really, Your Majesty? It's not even worth wasting your time with.
Can we return tomorrow when we're less tired?
Oh, tomorrow I go back to Boston, Your Majesty. This is the last chance I have of getting my invention recognized.
Very well, then. Tell me, Mr. Bell, what does it do, your machine? Can it bake bread?
No, but it can talk.
A machine that can talk? Well, that is indeed what you call spectacular.
Spectacular? It's ridiculous.
Well, let me show you, then. Now, I'm going through that door over there to a distance of about 500 feet. Now, in the meantime, Your Majesty, you hold this cup-like piece of metal to your ear and wait. Now, don't forget now. Hold it there until you hear my voice coming through it.
I will wait, my friend. Do not fear.
This is really an extravagant waste of time, Your Majesty.
Why, how can he hope to send a human voice over a wire?
And it's stifling hot
in here. If you please, I must have quiet. Otherwise, perhaps I miss the hearing of his voice when it comes through the little thing at my ear.
Hello?
Shh, I think it is now.
Your Majesty.
Oh, you hear, gentlemen. You hear. It speaks.
Listen to my voice. To be or not to be. That is the question. Whether 'tis better to bear the slings and arrows. Wait now, Your Majesty. Wait just a moment, please, and I'll rejoin you.
Oh, yes, yes, of course we'll wait, Mr. Bell. You, gentlemen, can you not see the possibilities of this machine?
For quoting Shakespeare, Your Majesty?
Your Majesty! Oh, but Mr. Bell returns. Hear what he will say.
Are you convinced now that it will work? And Can you not see the advantage of having one of them in every household and having all of them connected up with each other? Think of it, Your Majesty. To talk to anyone you like, anywhere you like, without leaving your own home.
You're perfectly right, Mr. Bell. Gentlemen, has this not been explained to your satisfaction, too?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, but this is true, gentlemen. What Mr. Bell has said is very true, and you have wronged him. But now I wish to make a statement. I wish to speak about it to the press. I will tell the whole country that what Mr. Bell has said is true, and that everybody should listen to his little machine and think about what he has said. Indeed, gentlemen, the most amazing part of this whole amazing exhibition is that you have not troubled yourself to listen to Mr. Bell before.
And Dom Pedro, Emperor Basel, was as good as his word. The story of the Emperor's interest in Alexander Graham Bell's machine was spread all over the country, and the telephone became the sensation of the Centennial Exposition. This enabled Bell to give further convincing demonstrations and to get financial backing for his invention. Without the Emperor's recognition of its value, it might have continued to be regarded as an oddity and its development retarded for generations. So it's to Emperor Dom Pedro II of Brazil, who became the first telephone subscriber, we can thank for starting the development of the commercial telephone. Believe it or not. Ladies and gentlemen, in the year 1854, President Santa Anna of Mexico ordered that a contest be held for the writing of a Mexican national anthem. The winner of this contest was Don Jaime Nuno, a young band leader. Shortly after Don Jaime's composition had been accepted, he suddenly and completely disappeared. For almost 50 years, his countrymen tried in vain to find him. Finally, he was discovered by a strange combination of chance and clever thinking. We are very fortunate tonight to have with us the son of this famous man, Mr. James Francis Nuno. Mr. Nuno, I would like you to tell us about the unusual way in which your father was finally discovered.
Certainly, Mr. Ripley. It was in Buffalo, New York in 1901. A delegation of Mexicans were there to take part in the Pan American Exhibition of that year. It was then that they stumbled on the information that my father was living in that city on Delaware Avenue. Mm-hmm. They rounded up the Mexican military band, which was playing at the exhibition, and took them down Delaware Avenue and had the band stop and play the Mexican national hymn in front of every house. So when the band finally approached my father's house, what else could he do but be at his front door waiting for them? And believe me, Mr. Ripley, it was the greatest day of his life.
I imagine it was. And so, ladies and gentlemen, Don Jaime, author of the Mexican national anthem, was found again by his people and publicly given the recognition due him. And thank you, Mr. James Francis Nuno, for coming up here to tell us the story of your famous father. And now, D'Artega and his orchestra are going to play that famous composition written by Mr. Nuno's father. Ladies and gentlemen, the national anthem of the Republic of Mexico. On one of my many interesting trips I've made through Mexico, I discovered a, believe it or not, about an ancient prophecy that led up to a great historical tragedy. To begin it, however, we must go to France. And again, let me draw a sketch of it for you. It's May the 22nd, 1856. The Imperial Palace of Saint-Cloud in Paris, the glittering capital of France's Second Empire, we find a distinguished guest being entertained by Emperor Napoleon III and his Empress Eugenie. The guest of honor is a 24-year-old Archduke Maximilian of Austria, member of the resplendent House of Habsburg and younger brother to the Emperor of Austria. The highlight of the program for this particular evening is a concert. And as our scene opens, this musical event is drawing to a close. We find the young Archduke sitting with the Empress in the Imperial box. He has just singled out the last selection for his enthusiastic comment and has asked if it is possible for him to meet its composer.
And now to meet this composer is the simplest of things, Highness. Comtesse, veuillez prier Monsieur Iradier de venir ici tout de suite.
Only let me assure your majesty, this cannot be said to be a whim of mine, because never have I had the pleasure to hear...
Your Imperial Highness, it has pleased you to summon me here.
Our honored guest has expressed a wish to know you, monsieur. Your Highness, may I present to you our court conductor, Maestro Iradier.
Your Imperial Highness, I am overwhelmed with emotion to be so honored by one such as you.
It would be most interesting for me to know, monsieur, how you came to write such a song.
Your Imperial Highness will forgive me, but it really was not I who composed this song. The melody I heard played by an ancient Indian during the time when I resided in the Americas.
Well, you've been to the Americas, monsieur.
Indeed, Highness. It was in Mexico, in a little town called San Luis Potosí, that the incident which I speak of occurs.
So, I should like to hear more of this incident, as you call it, monsieur.
It is briefly told. On one of my many trips, we were halted in this little town of which I speak by lack of a bridge. Huh? To amuse myself, then I wandered about the rain-drenched little town. As I walked, I suddenly heard music. A strange melody played on a reed instrument. A melody so haunting that I can hear it even now.
What's that?
It was coming from some point in the village, and in course of time, I found its source. This was a very dark and very forbidding little hut, in front of which was sitting the Indian of ancient age. He it was who played on a primitive reed this melody which you have heard tonight.
This is very interesting, monsieur. Did you learn the source from which this Indian took the melody?
Certain, my highness. The Indian told me of an old legend current among the Indians that it had been the funeral song of the last emperor of old Mexico.
But the last emperor of Mexico died 300 years ago.
Just so. The ancient one told me that it was publicly played for the last time on February 26, 1522, when the last Mexican emperor was put to death by Cortes. Since then, it has been handed down through the generations for a purpose.
This is an amazing history you've told me about your song, monsieur. It will please me to have a copy of it with your autograph.
Con mucho gusto. How shall I dedicate it?
You may write to Maximilian of Habsburg.
Habsburg? It is that to which the old Indian referred.
What you mean, this Indian mentioned the name of my family?
Just so, Highness.
What did he say?
He said that the song will not again be played publicly until...
Continue, monsieur.
Until the day comes when another last emperor of Mexico will meet a violent death.
Oh? Why should you be so nervous about telling me that, monsieur?
The last Mexican emperor was executed by order of Charles V of Spain, Highness, who was Habsburg. The ancient Indian added that this other last emperor of Mexico will be a descendant of the same family.
Oh, so... Have no fear, monsieur. The last thing in the world I intend to do is become Emperor of Mexico. And I am not superstitious.
Only 5 years pass when a series of world-shaking events take place. The United States becomes involved in a civil war. The preoccupation of our government enables Napoleon to send French troops into Mexico and bring that country under his complete control. He then finds it necessary to find a leader in whom he can place both confidence and trust and he immediately makes a decision. Our next scene opens in the Imperial study. Napoleon has summoned his secretary.
You sent for me, Your Majesty?
Oui. I have decided on the man to lead our Mexican venture.
Oh, may I inquire?
Archduke Maximilian of Austria.
His Imperial Highness has never been known to express any keen interest in your Mexican venture, sire.
He will be prevailed upon. I must have a person of high rank whom I can trust.
I have been told that Maximilian is intensely jealous of his brother because he was made Emperor of Austria while he is only still an archduke.
I know. Maximilian shall be made an emperor. He shall become Emperor of Mexico.
And so Maximilian, amid a great display of pomp and splendor, is crowned Emperor of Mexico. But 3 years later, the Civil War is over, and the United States regains its strength and demands the recall of the French armies in accordance with the Monroe Doctrine. Napoleon is forced to accede. Almost at once, the troops loyal to Maximilian are engaged in battle by the followers of the country's rightful president, Benito Juarez. Maximilian's troops are defeated, and he is captured, and we now find him before the presiding officer in a Mexican military court.
Your Imperial Highness, inasmuch as you have conspired against and succeeded in temporarily overthrowing the duly elected government of Mexico, it now becomes my duty to pass sentence upon you. For the crime of state of which you have been found guilty, there can be only one punishment. And so, in the name of the people of Mexico, I now order that you be put to death by firing squad.
June the 19th, 1867, as the clock on the church of San Felipe strikes 7 in the morning, His Imperial Highness, the Archduke Maximilian of Austria, is led to the hill dominating the town of Queretaro. There he turns and faces the firing squad which has escorted him.
You will take the blindfold, Your Highness?
No.
Your Highness, I wish to express to you the regret with which I personally carry out this order I have received.
I know, amigo. I know that a soldier must do his duty. Here are 6 ounces of gold to be distributed to each soldier. Tell them to aim well, not at my face, but at my heart.
It shall be done.
Attention!
Wait.
Yes, Your Highness.
What is that, that music that comes from the village?
Oh, it is a native. He plays a special song for this occasion.
So, then Monsieur Radia's ancient Indian was right.
What is it you say, Your Highness?
Nothing. It is just that I have become suddenly superstitious.
Attention! Prepare! Apunten! Fuego!
And so the prophecy of the ancient Mexicans, who saw their last emperor executed by the order of a Habsburg, came true. It was another Habsburg, over 3 centuries later, who was in turn executed by the Mexicans. And for him, they once again played their ancient funeral song as prophesied. And the song itself has come down to us to be played and known everywhere as La Paloma, believe it or not. And now I can think of nothing better than to hear that romantic ballad La Paloma as we know it today. So here it is with D'Ortega and his orchestra and our charming little songstress, Señorita Herrera, La Paloma.
you. Nadie me ha visto salir si no fui yo. Y una linda guachinanga y que allá voy yo. Se vino tras de mí, que sí, señor. Si a tu ventana llegare una paloma, trátala con cariño, que es mi persona. Cuéntale tus amores bien de mi vida. Corónala con flores, que es merecida. Ay, chinita, que sí. Ay, que dame tu amor. Ay, que vente conmigo, chinita, a donde vivo yo. Ay, chinita, que sí. Ay, que dame tu amor. Vente conmigo, chinita, a donde vivo yo. Que sí, que sí, que no y que no y que no y que sí. Que sí, que sí, que sí, que no y que no, que no y que sí.
Now, before Bob Ripley returns with his goodnight message, let me remind you that this program is presented by the Blue Network in cooperation with the Coordinator of Inter-American Affairs and is dedicated to the people of all the Americas, Americans all. And now here again is Bob Ripley.
A little over a year ago, I was in Yucatan in the city of Chichen Itza, the land of the Mayas. The Mayas were a remarkable race of people. They created vast cities, built pyramids, and created a culture of literature, art, and science that rivaled ancient Greece and Rome. Then, suddenly, they abandoned their cities and temples. No one knows why. Today, we find only ruins of this once remarkable people and a beautiful salutation, which I would like to repeat to you now. The farewell of the Mayas. Kashektek Yapayuts Behelai Yatta Sama, which means beautiful be your todays and still more beautiful your tomorrows.
Forget to listen in again next week when Bob Ripley brings you another program of See All the Americas with B.A. Rolfe, Dart Hagen, his famous Latin American orchestra, and more, believe it or not. This is the Blue Network.